Blog Talk Radio.
Romans 2:5,
nope.
The righteous judgment of the Most High, who will
yep.
render unto every man according to his
nope.
deeds, to them who by patience continue
yep.
in some well-doing seek,
nope.
for glory and honor and immorality,
yep.
eternal life. But unto them that are
nope.
contentious and do not obey the
yep.
truth, but obey unrighteousness, indignation, and wrath.
Oh, Craig
Lucas.
Yep.
You an African American?
Nope.
You believe that's your heritage?
Yep.
Do you know who you are?
Nope.
King, queen?
Yep.
Nigga with back?
Nope.
Do you shine like a star?
Yep.
Think they gon' tell you?
Nope.
We gon' expose them?
Yep.
Yeah.
They gon' take your life?
Nope.
So many secrets in the vault?
Yep.
Do this knowledge cost?
Nope.
Hop in the book to mine?
Yep.
Do we follow these laws?
Nope.
Do they still exist?
Yep.
Have time to wait?
Nope.
Do we have grace?
Yep.
Continue in sin?
Nope.
I'ma ask you again.
Yep.
Should we continue in sin? Christ is the way.
Yep.
Never gonna win.
Nope.
Trying to make it to heaven.
Yep.
Get there by sinning.
Nope.
Follow the commandments.
Yep.
Everybody got choices. I chose this walk, so why keep on trying? Everybody got choices. Choose the right path and nothing can stop us. Everybody got choices. Righteous life, devil don't like that, nah. Everybody got choices. Choose the right path and save your soul. Never going back.
No.
Going to the kingdom.
Make us straight.
Yep.
Is the Most High plan?
Nope.
You gon' learn today.
Yep.
Do you understand grace?
Nope.
Remember Noah's day?
Yep.
Did more than 8 people live?
Nope.
Will it be the same way?
Yep.
It's a broad way to heaven?
Nope.
It's a broad way to hell?
Yep.
You choosing death over life?
Nope.
You gon' change your life?
Yep.
Do you love these streets?
Nope.
Do you see police?
Yep.
You wanna get shot down?
Everybody got choices. Choose the right path and nothing can stop us. Everybody got choices. Righteous life, devil don't like that, nah. Everybody got choices. Choose the right path and save your soul. Never going back.
No.
Forward to the kingdom.
All right. Shalom, good evening. Welcome once again to another episode of ISBHBK Presents Bible Talk. My name is Mashab. I'm one of the teachers with the ISBHBK, the Israel School of Biblical History and Practical Knowledge. And we have school locations in San Antonio, Texas, Houston, Texas, Norfolk, Virginia, and Rochester, New York, as we're in the process of trying to revive and rebuild the school that we had in Albuquerque. Well, Shalom, good evening, everybody. Today is Tuesday. Your calendar's not wrong. Today is Tuesday, And yes, it was supposed to be Talks About Tuesdays, starting at 10 a.m. This morning, but the brother had some personal business that him and his wife had to take care of this morning. So he will be back most likely on everything definitely next week. Most likely willing. You know, I get inspired by his classes and everything also as well. So if one try to still keep a rhythm going, you got me tonight. All right, Tuesday night, you got me tonight. As we were trying to really go ahead and keep this ball rolling. As you know, we ask everybody, please check out ISBHPK.com. Stay up on the latest High Holy Days, Hebrew Israelite events, as well as Israelware, Street Ambiance, and at least the Bible Talk, and various YouTube platforms that we have, ISBHPK Houston, ISBHPK Norfolk, ISBHPK Rochester, ISBHPK San Antonio, and the different ways you can access any of our different classes. That the way the schedule is set up, and you can definitely find the class going or playing 7 days a week through any one of the various sources. That the teaching is constantly going out. All right, the teaching is constantly going out. And as you know, here with the ISBHPK podcast, the radio shows that we're doing, we're now available on not only through Google Podcast, but you can also get us on Apple iTunes Podcast, as well as iHeartRadio Podcast and Podcast Addict. We're on there also as well. Okay, let me see something here. All right. But as you might very well know, again, I'm in class right now, and unless it is an absolute dire emergency, I'm not going to pick the phone up right now. So let me do this. Let me do this, brother. Just give me 1 second. All right. But since trying to jump into last night fast, I went back and listened to it. I was doing a lot of talking, and hopefully tonight, that's not my intention. Even from the name of the podcast that we do, is called Bible Talk. It is really my intent to let a lot more of the Bible do the talking, a lot more of the scriptures do the talking. As I'm doing more and more studies, as you know, I'm getting more into the commentaries now, and the histories and the reference books, and just trying to help enhance my understanding of the scriptures and of the times and the thing that was going on. And one particular angle that I particularly like, I like to investigate when I'm doing my studies, is the mindset of the people and the mindset of the heroes. What was going on in their mind? What type of human experiences, what type of human feelings were taking place at the time when we read the scriptures? That for my time, when I was going to church, Sunday church, that for the few times that we would have Bible study, we would just do about 3 or 4 scriptures, and there'd be a whole lot of talking or what have you. The Bible is always presented, and the people of the Bible are always presented as people that were so distant and also otherwise so perfect that sometimes it was hard to relate to them, especially if it was coming, you know, with all the white images of the people of the Bible. As much as I knew the Bible was an important weapon, it was an important tool to have, that to relate to it was hard. It was definitely not coming from a perspective that I shared. That was presented just as Caucasian people going through Caucasian issues. And we were supposed to learn from it. And it was, you know, really getting that real religious spin on things, but not being able to really relate to the people of the Bible, not being able to relate to the characters, the heroes, the people of the Bible. So that was why it was so important when my teachers, elders first started teaching, as I came into the knowledge, that there was a lot of stress on the color of the people of the Bible. But I was stressed heavy because it was, you know, sure, it was coming after the Black Panthers. It was coming after the 60s civil rights movements, whatever, where, you know, he had songs like Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. You know, he had Angela Davis when she protested and her afro stood up. He had the Brothers at the Olympics, now holding up the fist of power. And the afro picks in the hair with the fist or whatever. It was a real strong Black awareness going on, time going on. And we were looking for an identity. And, you know, I come in an era, you know, the early 80s, mid-80s, where, you know, the African medallions was to die for. That was, you had to have an African medallion. You know, it was leather, with a leather necklace, leather strap that came around your neck with the continent of Africa, and with the colors red, the black, and the green. That it really was about recognizing black people and standing up as black and everything was about black. So my elders, as I came into this knowledge in the late 80s, to be able to relate to the people of the Bible that they were actually black, that took an adjustment. And I know now the teaching is, and the feeling is given that, well, I don't care what color he is, what color he are, I love God, I still love Jesus. What's not understood by presenting for over 500 years that the people of the Bible were white, and presenting them and white people as being the perfect people, and that they were blessed by God with the golden blonde hair, with the ocean blue eyes, the square cut jaw jawline, the pert cute little nose, the red rosy cheeks, that everything white is just good and perfect, and to have everything looked at as that dark skin, you know, that everything dark or black is evil, bad, corrupt. It's a wrong. It's a real psychological hatred that gets developed among black people. To where if you go back and look at a lot of celebrities, especially coming from the 70s, 80s, and the 90s, where you see a lot of celebrities that they were getting a lot of plastic surgery. Getting a lot of plastic surgery among our people, that as soon as they start to get a little bit of wealth or get a little bit of fame or whatever, you see the nose jobs come in. And I still have that wide, broad nose that niggas are known for, that the first thing in plastic surgery, it'd be the nose job. Today, it's either going to be a butt lift or breast implants. It's going to be some of that sort. But celebrities back then, it wasn't so much about the breasts and the derriere. It was more about wanting to fit the mold of white people. And you still see it going on today, where you see a lot of celebrities they make sure they get the blonde highlights, if not getting the blonde hair, either in a wig or dyeing the hair blonde. The psychology behind all that, it does teach a hatred for yourself, that if you see that you don't match the people of the Bible, then there must be something wrong with you. And then to look up and see how we're treated as animals, as subhuman, as two-thirds of a man, like the U.S. Constitution says, that we're not even human beings. We're not people. We're not worthy of humanity. That when you can see, you know, in the 70s and 80s, there was a Save the Dog campaigns, Save the Whale campaigns, Save the Baby Seal campaigns, save all types of animal campaigns, but you never saw save black people campaigns. As the Planned Parenthood was being multiplying like the measles, like chickenpox, throughout our neighborhoods, the projects that a lot of the forces grew up in, the drug epidemics from heroin back in the 20s through the 30s, 40s, and 50s to the weed and eventually the crack, and now the that the blues, the fentanyl, that, again, to see that what we go through and what happens with us, there's been this overwhelming thought or understanding that we need something black to relate to. So we started gravitating to things like the Black Panthers. We started gravitating to things like the Muslims that were representing a strong, the idea of what a strong black man should look like, that he doesn't have the afro, he doesn't have the Jerry curl, and he doesn't even have a beard, because that was considered kind of you know, barbarian. That was considered kind of beastly or what have you. But he's clean-shaven. He wears a bow tie. He wears a suit. And he's going to be respected as a man. And we had all these type of different, and then we had, you know, the black, the HBCUs, the historically black universities, that we had this thing of black togetherness, and wanting to get and relate to everything black. So for our elders to come back and really be laying out this heavy, that in the lieu of all these other different identities, black, Afrocentric, black representation, things going on from the Zulu Nation, hip hop, Pan Africanism, that in the midst of all these different types of things going on, that to come back and now show that, you know, the Bible is not the white man's book. That the Bible is the book of our people, and that we would stress, and for some part do today, so we do stress that the people of the Bible are black, and we follow the scriptures that really focus on showing black, showing color, and that's to help give us a starting point to start to relate to the Bible, to start to relate to that. Now hold up, when I look at the Bible and I read the Bible now, instead of that 500-year curse of when I think about the Bible, I'm thinking about white people. And I'm thinking about what they might be going through and how this might affect them. And to feel uplift them as heroes and then have pity and sorrow on them because they are the people of the Bible. Now, the more and more my brain was getting cleansed of those false lies and those which are actually demonic images because they're lies, they're blasphemy. And start to replace the that these really are my people. These really, that we really are the Israelites. And then as you start matching it, like the mindsets and the characters, the psychology of our people. Okay, brothers and sisters, I see it's going to be one of them nice. Hold on 1 second, please.
You hear sirens and semis pop. Judah keep vexing Ephraim. When will the envy stop? No love for any cops. That's what got Kenny shot. Y'all drinking Henny shots. I'm investing in penny stocks. They give me props. Rapping, teaching, debating, unity while Satan trying to weaken the nation. Cops in my community kill us with every opportunity. No justice or peace, the police get immunity. Look, rubber bullets and riot suits when they gear up. Asking where the love went, cause judgment is near us. And kids rather pour up a foe and sip the syrup than learn about how the black Moors ruled in Europe. We divided by economic material schism. My people are serial victims of imperialism. I tell the truth in the booth, boy, my people no lie, they love the Hebrew Israelites. After N-O-I, let's pray. I pray, Abba Naba Yahweh rise. I pray for your grace and everything that you shall provide. I pray every day that you teach me how to strive to put my trust in you, because in you is where the power lies. My people are dead and
All right. Let's get it back.
All right. You're going to learn today.
So, again, in this long opening statement, and I admit it is long, that one thing I like to do in my classes is I'm getting more and more into the history, is to really now start to try and examine and relate to the people of the Bible, to the characters of the Bible, to the people that we're reading about,
the real true humanity of what they were going through. That, as the scripture says, that there's nothing new under the sun. That a lot of the feelings that we feel today as a people, as we now start to identify ourselves as Israelites and understand that we are the people of the book, that a lot of the same feelings that we have, they must have been hit with some of the same humanity, some of the same feelings, some of the same vulnerabilities, some of the same emotional pulls and tugs, that as much as it's been pushed in our people's minds as an almost automatic response to say, well, nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. Nobody's Jesus. And now these are supposed to be, I guess, justifications. That these are not supposed to be excuses of why we can't relate to the people of the Bible and why the effort can't be put in, and that because I feel a certain way, that's supposed to justify why I don't have to try. That's supposed to justify or give an excuse of why I. Nobody knows my sorrow. Nobody knows my pain. Nobody knows what I've been through and how hard this is, and that, no, I can't do it. But as we come back in my research and in the class I try to bring out, I do try and bring out and really tap into what the mindset of the people was, and no matter what topic we might be going through or covering, let's go and look at the mindset of the people, and that is relatable. That a lot of things that they were going through and a lot of things they were happening, whether it was the good or the bad, that let's look at the mindset, the mental state of the people and what they were faced with, right? That and again, that's not the only type of teaching that there is, but that is more my type of teaching style that I like to get into. So, and continuing now, from carrying over from last night's class, last night we was going over Judges chapter 17, and in Judges chapter 17 we seen where the dangers of what was first stated in the Bible, and Israel had no king, and every man did that was what was right in his own eyes. And again, all of this is really just a continuation and sub series of a series I've started going a couple months back, probably 6-7 months back. Of just continuing to build the point of the love of money being the root of all evil. The love of money being the root of all evil. And that we can see that even among Israelites, while we were living in the promised land, that our love of seeking comfort, seeking pleasure, seeking wealth, even more wealth, that our greed, we look, it's funny, we can look at the so-called white man and be ready to jump all in his case and jump all down his throat for how greedy they are and how selfish they are, how hypocritical they are, how they're not about justice. But the so-called white man is just a mirror of us. That everything the so-called white man does, the Most High just put that in the package so that we can see ourselves. You know, one of the teachings that we used to push a lot was we got to remember that when we go back to Adam, that Cain and Abel, they represented Adam, that Adam's good side and Adam's bad side. But Cain came out of Adam. That Cain represented the negative side of parts of Adam, of who he was, being a killer, being a liar, wanting to sacrifice and worship what he wanted to. That was all really a representation of Adam, that Cain came out of Adam. As we come back now and then we focus on after the flood, we look at Jacob and Esau, that they came out of Isaac. That Esau was now the representative of the border of evil, you know, from the book of Malachi, that the people that God hates, that it's not just about God hates them because of who they are and what they've done, but they represent everything bad about Hebrew Israelites. Remember, Jeremiah, we went over this the other day, and Jeremiah, God said that we taught the wicked ones our ways. We taught the wicked. We taught the devil, who you know, the we the devil of the Bible, we taught him how to be more wicked, being the Hebrew Israelites. So to come back now and really kind of more focus on and look at, because there's this thing going on in Israel that we got to get out of America, and that we get out of America and we separate from the so-called white man, that's just going to make everything good. That we're going to get away from the so-called white man, and we're going to get off the grid, and that just because we call ourselves now Hebrew Israelites, that now we're basically moving into utopia, that we're moving into the kingdom of heaven. Because now I'm around so-called Negroes, West Indians, Puerto Ricans, Haitians, Dominicans, Cubans, North American Indians, similar Indians, Argentinians, Chileans, Brazilians, Colombians, Panamanians, so-called Mexicans. And now we call ourselves Hebrew Israelites. That's supposed to be the end all. That's supposed to be it. And now if we could just get off the grid and we could just move to our own communities and move into our own whatever, where it's just Hebrew Israelites, that then it's just about we're going to just wait, be kind of kicking it. Everything's going to be hunky-dory. And we're just going to wait for Christ to come. And we're going to eat organic food. And we're going to eat, have our own health care set up. And life is just going to be good to where that ain't going to want to leave. But because Yahweh Shai is coming, and Christ coming, okay, yeah, now we'll leave. But, oh, thank God we got away from the so-called white man. Oh, hey, thank God we got away from those evil bastards. But long before the Most High raised up the so-called white man, cleaned him, got him out the caves, taught him how to shave, and put some clothes on him, we as Israelites have been the epitome of wickedness. The Most High was just trying to use the so-called white man to show us in our greed, and that is never that. There's always more, you know, the thought about process of I got to stay hungry. That there's always more to get. It's never too much, never too much, never too much. The sky is the limit. That really is our mentality as Israelites. And when we come back and we read these chapters and read these scriptures and read these histories, it's becoming more and more evident. I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to have to now. And trying to help relate. I know I want to get to the scriptures. I really do. I know I'm doing a lot of talking. But I'm trying to give a little build-up to what I'm talking about. So as we hit these scriptures again, hopefully they're going to start to make a little bit more sense and put them in a little better light. Yesterday I had mentioned about in this fad. I'm going to call it a fad. And it's fad among Israelites and among Israelites that we need to get away from the so-called white man as far as moving to Egypt in on the continent of Africa, moving to places like Belize, Central and South America, moving over to the Middle East. And that if they just get away from the so-called white man here in America, that somehow life is just going to be good, that life is just going to be perfect. And that it's almost like this mental process going on among us that so that has never been tried before of us wanting to separate and build our own, that we just never was able to come up with that concept of black townships, of black farming, of when I say black, I'm talking about even including so-called Native Americans. I'm talking when I say Native Americans from North, Central, and South America. Now, I'm only focusing on them because I'm here in the Western Hemisphere. That this concept that if we can just get away and get our own, that if we get we get some land, we can grow our own crops, we can have our own schools, we get our own banks, we get our own what have you, and that if we just do that, getting away from the so-called white man, we're gonna have it made. Brothers and sisters, we were kicked out of the promised land. While in the promised land, as knowing we were Hebrew Israelites, speaking Hebrew, and not only just speaking Hebrew sporadically, we was able to sing songs in Hebrew. Remember, the book of Psalms, P-S-A-L-A-M-S,
The 149 books, 150 books of Psalms. Remember, those are all songs. When we read Deuteronomy chapter 15, that's the song of Moses. That whole chapter was a song. We were a very musical people, like we are today. So to be able to speak and sing slang in the Hebrew and have a different dialect of Hebrew that we had, and to know our not only our tribe and have a pedigree, have a written record of tracing you all the way back, like no different than if it was the Crips and the Bloods, knowing what set you claiming, to be able to trace your identity, your genealogy, your family tree back to whichever son came out of Jacob. We had those records. We had those whatever the institutions of learning we had. It was controlled by just us Israelites. It was not controlled by any other nation. Coming with their doctrines, coming with their philosophies, coming with their poison. It was just Israel, but we were still tripping. So this idea that if we didn't do it in the promised land, but now if we just come and get some acreage, or we move to another country, to another city, then now all of a sudden it's going to just be good, and then all that's left is wait for Yahweh Shai to come? But never address the issues that God has with us of what our forefathers, how they acted, what their mentality was, what their mental state was, how they looked at things, their perspectives. Brothers and sisters, as we come back and look, we carry a lot of those perspectives. We carry a lot of those outlooks still to this very day, even though now we call ourselves Hebrew Israelites. We really truly do. So one thing I'm doing, and this is a correction I want to make. I never knew that there was an all black city in New Mexico that was founded in the early 1900s, like right around the turn of the century. I never knew that. It was an all black city, town, established for free black slaves. Remember, Texas was a slave state. So when Juneteenth hit, and a lot of the slaves kind of realized, I guess they were, you know, supposedly free, a lot of them came to New Mexico. There was a thing called the Great Migration, and that's some history I need to research and make a class about. But there was a couple of great migrations that came from the Deep South across America of black people. Well, there was a migration from Texas to New Mexico, and there was a town that was established. Yesterday I called it Freedom Town. It wasn't called Freedom Town. It was called Blackdom, New Mexico. And brothers, I promise you all can go look this up. Black boom towns at the turn of the century. And y'all know where I'm getting this from. This research that gave me the idea to look some of these things up was, I don't know the sister's name, but her video she did has gone viral. It came about a year ago. I didn't know that. And it was talking about how many black towns, a lot of man-made lakes today, they're man-made lakes because they're actually covering, have drowned, submerged a lot of the black towns that were put together by all black people. And that a lot of these towns, as I'm doing some of this research, we had lawyers, we had banks, we had businesses, we had post offices, we had a government, and it was all black people. It was all black people. Not just Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That as I'm doing the research, more and more keeps coming out. And again, I'm looking at this that us just now, just getting to the point, if we think it's enough, just the point that we're Israelites, and now we're going to move away from the cities, or even move away from America, and we're going to get our own land and grow our own crops, and set up our own schools, set up our own government, set up our own protection, set up our own everything. What was Marcus Garvey about, brothers and sisters? I mean, just in more recent memory of someone who tried the exact same thing. As if we're going to escape Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 68,
Where he, the Most High told us, because we've not been keeping his commandments and his statute and his judgments, that all these curses will come upon us, and that we're going to serve our enemies, and that no man should buy us. From all the slave revolts that have taken place since the 1400s, 1492, the many different slave revolts, and y'all don't get it twisted. Haiti was a Levi down there in Haiti. If you look today, they're still afraid to let Haitians come to America and join up with the so-called African-Americans here in America. The way them, the so-called Haitians, the Levites in Haiti, the black rebellions that they led, my goodness, that scared the hell out of America. They defeated Napoleon. They defeated Napoleon Bonaparte, whatever his name is. Concept that if we just separate out Hebrew Israelites, that's all it's going to take, and it's going to be good. Brothers and sisters, there's nothing new under the sun. Now, I ain't going to say it, don't try it. But to think that that's going to be the end-all to beat-all, no. It was said that we had to serve our enemies in one of all things. All things. Until Shiloh come, until Christ comes. So, in doing this research, Black Boom Towns, the first all-black city in New Mexico, it was all black people, was called Blackdom, New Mexico. B-L-A-C-K-D-O-M. Blackdom, Blackdom, New Mexico. And from the Wikipedia, Free Encyclopedia, Blackdom is a historic freedom colony in Chavez County, New Mexico. United States, with a population of 300 at its height in 1908. This was founded by African American settlers in 1901 and abandoned in the mid 1920s. You go and do the research. I'm just gonna read the titles and everything, but if you go back and read by some of these places, again, if y'all can look it up for yourselves. Blackdom, New Mexico. It was all black people, and they was growing crops. Blackdom, they said, is about 16 miles south of modern-day Roswell, New Mexico. For those who might have traveled, done any type of traveling, especially in particular if you wanted to travel from Albuquerque or from San Antonio and went to Albuquerque and you wound up going up to 285, then you're very familiar with the 285 that you hit the city of Roswell. That whether you're coming down from Clients Corner, if you go from Albuquerque going east on I-40, you can hit Clients Corners. At Clients Corners, you can hit the 285 and bring that south. And the first kind of major city you're going to come to is Roswell. Roswell is about 3 hours away from Albuquerque. Now, you can either take a left, I think it's the 37 or 87, and go on to eventually to La Mesa, Texas, Big Springs, Texas, San Angelo, to Eden, then from Eden go down to Junction, and then hit the 10, and then take that all into San Antonio. That's one way of going. Or you might stay on the 285 coming from Albuquerque, where from Clients Corners you hit Roswell, but you keep going south. As you keep going south from Roswell, then eventually you're going to hit if I remember my geography correctly, you're going to hit Carlsbad Caverns. And then I think the next like major city from there is going to be Pecos, Texas. And then from Pecos, Texas, that's going to take you to Fort Stockton, Texas. And then from Fort Stockton, you're going to hit the 10, and then, you know, eventually bring that all into San Antonio. So on the 25, about 6 miles south of Roswell, was this all-black town called Blackdom, New Mexico, established by African-American settlers that were former slaves. They were former sharecroppers in 1901. It's abandoned now. It's abandoned now, and it's a ghost town. And I think all they have is like just a historical marker. If you're driving by, you wouldn't even notice it. The historical marker, it might say historical
sight or whatever. But if you're driving, you're going to keep right up, keep it moving. You're going to keep it running, but you're not even going to know what you're looking at or what used to be there. But that was the very first black, all-black city in Mexico. And me being from Albuquerque, being from Mexico, to understand and know that there was an all-black city, an all-black town in New Mexico? That tripped me out. But what happened to it? What happened to it was Deuteronomy chapter 20, verse 16, cursed shall be in the city, and cursed shall be in the field. But again, this concept of we really think we're hitting something new, that, you know what we need to do is get our own land and grow our own crops and raise our own schools, our own banks, our own stores, our own markets, our own government, where it's just us. Brothers, sisters, we've done this. We did it in Israel. We did it while we were in the promised land. And we started acting like plum fools. I know I'm going to talk, and I don't want you, but I'm just going to say this real quick. Again, you on Google search, you can do a list of freedmen's towns. And it's going to take you to Wikipedia. A list of freedmen's towns. A historically African-American municipality. This is what a free town, a freedman's town was. Known by various names, various areas as Freedmen's Town or Freedom Towns or All Black Towns are municipalities which were established by or for a predominantly African-American population. Many of these municipalities were established or populated by freed slaves, either during or after the period of legal slavery in the United States in the 19th century. Brothers, sisters, let me find this one real quick. I didn't get it. Oh, damn. And I erased it. Do y'all know that there was an all-black city, all-black freedom town set up in San Antonio, Texas? It was called the Alley. What was that damn thing called? Oh. It's right there downtown going towards the east side. Everybody knows where Commerce is in San Antonio. If you're standing at the River Center Mall, and you're facing, and you have the Alamo on your left hand side, you're facing the mall, and to your left will be the Alamo, all right. So you're looking towards the east. Come back over to Commerce, and if you remember, there's the River Center Mall, and then across the street from River Center Mall, I believe that is Commerce, you have that Denny's. Then you have the highway, and then right after the highway, you've got that little section that's right next to the train station. Brother, this is that little section right there where I forget the name of that club that used to be there. God almighty. But that little section right there, if anybody's getting a mental picture, those that have been to San Antonio, that was originally that spot right there, and it's called Alley. It's called the Alley of San Antonio. That was originally set up by free. It was African American town that was set up right there. That was set up by black people right there. At the beginning of what became known as the East Side. That was all black. Not just the East Side, period. That particular section we had our own town right there in San Antonio. I want to bring this up more, but it's going to take – I'm not going to get to these scriptures, but I'm going to get to these scriptures. And, again, my whole point of bringing this type of stuff out is this concept that all we got to do now is know we're Hebrew Israelites, we know our name, and this concept that now if we could just separate and get our own land, we can grow our own crops, we can have our own schools, we can have our own banks, we can have our own markets, we can have our own everything,
Even here in America, that's already been tried and done. And not only now here in America has that been tried and done, brothers and sisters, we were doing the same thing in Israel. The same mentality in Israel that we're going to separate and we're going to be about me and mine. Now I'm going to work on my business. I'm going to work on my profits. I'm going to work on me. That, and dealing with this topic that we're dealing with, it is the second part of the series, that going back to Judges chapter 17, verse 6, let me close this window out. That when they say, if you don't know your history, you're bound to repeat it, that's a true fact. Yeah, I couldn't agree with that statement even any less ever. When we go to Judges, yesterday we read Judges chapter 17, the whole chapter. Before reading the whole chapter, we were reading four times in Judges, it talks about the statement is brought up that there was no king in Israel, and everybody did what was right in his own eyes. And we came back and was reading Judges chapter 17, the whole 17th chapter, which was, again, mind-blowing, mind-boggling. But I'm just going to come back and touch on that aspect one more time. When we go to Judges chapter 17, verse 6, and it says, in those days, there was no king in Israel, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And there was a young man out of Bethlehem of Judah, of the family of Judah, who was a Levite, and he sojourned there. And the man departed out of the city from Bethlehem of Judah to sojourn where he could find a place. And he came to Mount Ephraim, to the house of Micah, as he journeyed. And Micah said unto him, whence comest thou? And he said unto him, I am a Levite of Bethlehem, Judah, and I go to sojourn here where I may find a place. And Micah said unto him, dwell with me and be unto me a father and a priest, and I will give thee 10 shekels of silver by the year and a suit of apparel and thy victuals. So the Levite went in, and the Levite was content to dwell with the man, and the young man was unto him as one of his sons. And Micah consecrated the Levite, and the young man became his priest and was in the house of Micah. Then said Micah, now know that the Lord will do me good, seeing I have a Levite to my priest. We read a commentary by John Gill on what was going on with that. That was yesterday. Pick up today, as my time's getting short, I want to get so exacting. I'm going to go to the Matthew Henry Concise Commentary, right? I want to go to the Matthew Henry Concise Commentary on the Bible, and we're going to read Judges chapter 17, verses 1 through 6, his commentary on Judges chapter 17, verse 1 through 6. And as I was saying before, I like going into these commentaries because these men had access to a lot more records, a lot more reference books that we today, that we have not had access to. That their studies, their university studies, their research that they was able to go into, being the theologians at the time, and many of them being over in Europe, being all throughout Europe, that they had access to a lot more records than what we have. All right? And that's why I'm going to them for the historical elements that they bring, as well as, like I was saying, getting into the mindsets and the mentality of the people. So in Judges chapter 17, verse 1 through 6, and checking out the Matthew Henry Concise Commentary, it says, what is related in this and the rest of the chapters to the end of the book was done soon after the death of Joshua. That it might appear how happy the nation was under the judges. Here is showed how unhappy they were when there was no judge. The love of money made Micah so undutiful to his mother as to rob her, and made her so unkind to her son as to curse him. Outward losses drive good people to their prayers, but bad people to their curses. This woman's silver was her God before it was made into a graven image, a graven or molten image. Micah and his mother agreed to turn their money into a God and set up
idol worship in their family. See the cause of this corruption? See how corrupt things got or get when they're trying to come back and relate where all this is coming from, for in case you know your first time tuning in. To have no king, but for everybody to do what was right in their own eyes. To have no king was to have no government, was to have no order. And as we was going over yesterday, as some of the historians were bringing out, that there was no ministers, and there was nobody to protect the ministers that was trying to give the people the word of God. That the priests, the Levites were there, but all the Levites did was sacrifice animals. Remember, scripture tells us that we had lost the laws of God. So for as much as the priests were doing sacrifices, yeah, they were doing sacrifices, but there was nobody to keep going back into the scriptures, into the scrolls, into the book of the law. The book of the law had got lost. So there was no government to protect the ministers that was teaching people, showing people that what they was doing was wrong. Then everybody became their own self-governor and made sure it was about, I'm just going to take care of me and my family. And this is a good thing or a bad thing based on how me and my family are doing. It had nothing to do with the scriptures or the scrolls or the book of the law at the time. The sense of righteousness was only based on how it made you and your family feel. And brothers and sisters, it got bad. It got bad among Israelites. We took that shit to the next level of everybody doing what was right in their own eyes. And I'm not going to submit myself to any government or anybody telling me or showing me God's word that my sense of righteousness is based on how happy my family is. What kind of luxuries, what kind of comforts, what kind of pleasures me and my family can afford. But this was in the promised land. We was already a wealthy nation, and it became about acquiring more wealth. This is why I was saying earlier, the greed that we as Israelites displayed and got carried away into. It's almost like Esau got nothing on us. Esau didn't have nothing on us. Let me continue. It says, every man did that which was right in his own eyes, and then they soon did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. That it didn't take much. It didn't take much for it to finally get to a point where it says, for when we understand the scripture that says, don't follow your own imagination. Don't follow your own understanding. That you come back and look at, we understand where these warnings came from. Because this is what Israel was most definitely getting caught up into. And this is right after the death of Joshua. This wasn't after Solomon messed up. This wasn't after, you know, his bad example. We're talking about after Joshua died, we immediately, even before then, I mean, in the wilderness, we was already going off. And coming out of Egypt, we was already mentally dysfunctional. And it had nothing to do with Esau. And nothing to do with the white man. Coming to Matthew Paul's commentary. Now I'm going to read from Matthew Paul's commentary. When it says no king, an example, it says no judge to govern or control them. The word king being here used largely for a supreme magistrate, as in Genesis chapter 36 verse 31 and Deuteronomy chapter 33 verse 3. The Most High raised up judges to rule and deliver the people when he saw fit. And at other times, for their sins, he suffered them to be without them. And such a time this was. And therefore, they ran into that idolatry from which the judges usually kept them, as appears by that solemn and oft-repeated passage in this book, that after the death of such or such a judge, the people forsook the Lord and turned to idols. Matthew Poole is not saying, commenting on that which was right in his own eyes. He's saying, an example, not what pleased God, but what best suited his own fancy or lust. And we read yesterday, brothers and sisters, how
this brother Micah in Judges chapter 17, that he stole this silver, 1,100 shekels of silver from his mom. She cursed him. He gave it back. She gave him 200 shekels of silver back and said, the Lord bless thee, and that I was going to give this gold, this silver to you anyway, in the name of God, so that you can go and make some graven images and make some idols. I know what I'm saying. It might not sound, seems crazy, but that, go back and read Judges chapter 17 if you haven't read it already, if you missed yesterday's class. That this was the mentality we got to. And that this cat Micah, which was an example of what many in Israel was doing, Micah raised his own son up to be a priest to him. Of course, if you raise this dude and train this dude, your son, to think and be a certain way, of course he's going to agree with you being his dad. He's not going to tell you that you're doing wrong. And now you make him your priest? You make your son, who you had the biggest influence over, you make him your priest? Then this Levite, this hippie Levite, this gypsy vagabond Levite, just because he's a Levite, you said, man, I'll take care of you. You can come to my house, and you can sacrifice to the Most High. And then I'll know God will be with me even that much more, because I got a Levite in my house as well as all my other images, all my other gods. This is how ridiculous we got that we get as Israelites. Now, when I go to the let me get this by myself. Let me get this. Let me pull my East word back up. When I go to the Annotated Bible, is this the one I wanted? Right. When I go to the Annotated Bible, my commentary, the Annotated Bible commentary, it's going to give us a breakdown about Genesis 17, verses 1 through 13. Now, I'm going to kind of go ahead and get through this. There's a lot more other commentaries just on focusing on Israel doing that, which is right in their own eyes. But I want to move on and get some more examples of how carried away we as Israelites get. And this was, again, mind you, this was in the Promised Land, knowing we were Israelites, speaking Hebrew, had our own crops, had our own houses, estates, plantations, and that we couldn't have enough. The wealth that we accumulated coming out of Egypt, that was already there. And then the desire to acquire even more wealth, to afford us more luxuries, to afford us more pleasures. They're the same, like, give a nigga rope, you want to be a cowboy? Yeah, we've always taken shit too far. And the main thing is, nobody's going to tell me that what I'm doing is wrong, because look at how well I'm boasting. Look at how I'm prospering. Look at how I got more than you. Look at how I've got this, I got that. And that's how I know God's with me. No, get that book out of here. I don't need the book. I don't need the Bible. I don't need to be so close-minded. And I don't need you bringing that negative mentality around me. You just unambitious. You're just lazy. You just don't want to work. That if you would just go ahead and stop complaining and pull yourself up by your bootstraps, that you can see that you can achieve all these different type of things also. But you don't have enough ambition. You don't have enough drive. Whatever the rock song, you know, Dwayne Johnson's motivation song or whatever. So in reading this commentary now, the annotated Bible commentary, it says the last five chapters of the book form an appendix. The events given did not occur after Samson's death, but they happened many years before. These chapters are not in chronological order, but arranged in this way to teach the root of the evil and its results. This answers much, if not all, of the objections of the critics. These chapters revealed the internal corruption which existed in Israel during the different declinations. As we continually kept falling, going down and down and down, and our moral character, not our financial character, and our moral character while in the promised land. It says idolatry and lawlessness are the two characteristics, the two characteristic features. True worship and dependence on God is given up, and then follows the dreadful fruit of this, which is hatred, strife, culminating in lawlessness. The predictions in the New Testament reveal the same two phases. Departure from the faith is followed by moral corruption. And this is what Paul told Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 1. Now the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. And then also his warning in 2 Timothy chapter 3. That was 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 1. Then the other admonishing or warning in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 4, which, and we all know this, we've been over before. This know also that in the last days, perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemous, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truth breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. That this, with there being nothing new under the sun, Paul wasn't just some mystic, neo-soul, nag chomper smelling dude that was just, you know, they just sat around at a hookah bar and just spitting off the top of the dome just certain things that came to his mind, and somebody that was around just having to write it down, whatever, because, yo, that's heavy, man, that's profound, yo. I see your third eye is open to the ISIS precept of the third millennium of the Nibiru. No, it didn't require any of that. Go read the history of Israel. Go read the history of the Israelites. This has been our pattern. It says, then we find, reading on with the commentary, then we find in these chapters a statement which does not appear elsewhere in the book. There was no king in Israel. It's a statement made four times from Judges chapter 17, verse 6, Judges chapter 18, verse 1, Judges chapter 19, verse 1, and Judges chapter 21, verse 25. A king was needed to remedy these sad internal conditions. This departure from God and strife of one against the other. This is an evident link with the preparation for the history which follows. Even so, let me adjust this. Even so, in this age of evil, darkness, and cunning lawlessness, what the world needs is a king. What the Israelites need is a king. A government. A council. That's going to keep us in God's word, based on the Christ. And this is why we need Christ to return. Let me jump to the chase in that one. This is why we need Christ to return. It says the King of righteousness and peace. Why is Christ going to be the King of peace? Because he's going to be the last word. He being the head, he's going to have the last word. That's why it's going to be peace. And so that people just continue to argue and debate, and they've learned how to, if I run my mouth long enough, I'm going to get my way. If I run my mouth long enough and have a temper tantrum, I'm going to get things my way. No, we need that king. He gets the last word. And at the end of his word, if you don't like it, that's death. It says, when he comes, order will be brought out of chaos. All strife and war, all bloodshed and lawlessness will cease. And we know that from Isaiah, the second chapter. We do know this. I want to jump down now to the third paragraph of the annotated Bible. It says, there is no need of such comment. The typical applications is seen at a glance. Here is a man-made God, a man-made worship, and a man-made priest. Such is the state of ritualistic Christendom. That what he's essentially saying is, We get so caught up into the rituals and the technicalities of being Israelites. Again, we're starting to repeat the same actions that got the Most High pissed off as in the first place. That we're getting more caught up into the rituals and the technicalities of things, but we're still basing our right, that I'm right, based on the level of comfort I'm achieving, the level of prosperity I'm now reaching. We've been here. It says, much of that which is called worship is simply man-made and dishonors the Most High as much or even more than the idolatry of heathendom. That the heathen doing these type of things, cool. Most understands the gods and nations are idols. They're supposed to do that. But we as Israelites, we get caught up into this. We take it too far. We really do take it too far. It says, and how the false priesthood is here typified. We have but one priest as the people of God, and that is our gracious Lord. Through his infinite grace, all the believers are constituted priests with him. Jumping down to the fifth paragraph, it says, the Levite himself is another sign of the times. He is of the Levites of Judah, has been for a while in Bethlehem, Judah, and wandered away again to find where he may another temporary resting place. His is the restless foot of a stranger, where he might have claimed inheritance. And he is ready to find a home where he should have been a stranger. Little solicitation prevails with him. His sustenance, a suit of clothes, a salary has prevailed with many in all ages of the world. And the Levite exchanges his ministry for priesthood in the home of Micah, where the idolatry of the place is sanctified with Jehovah's name, with the Most High's name. All this is simple enough to read by those that care. And Christendom has exhibited every detail of this transformation. Not, alas, as it would seem, a long process, a manufactured priesthood for manufactured gods, all covered with a fair name of orthodoxy, and then doing with great satisfaction what is right in their own eyes. If this ain't the modern-day church, I'm not just talking, when I say modern-day church, I'm including a lot of Israelite congregations, that we still get caught up. We raise up priests and teachers and people we're going to follow the same way our foreparents did in the promised land. Like Paul warned Timothy, that we're going to gather unto ourselves teachers having itching ears that are going to tell us what we want to hear. That the way I'm living, which is based upon my prosperity, which is based on my level of comfort, that regard, whatever's going on, the ends justify the means. That it's all good. God must be with this. God, that this is cool. What is this? We've been here. We've been here before. And I keep stressing that. I keep saying that, and trying to really press the point. And I know it seems like it's probably getting redundant, but that's how much is stuck in my head. That's how much this very topic is stuck in my head. That instead of really going at ourselves and even understanding what to go at, the thought that it's enough to know I'm a Hebrew Israelite, and that the pursuit of happiness and the pursuit of pleasure and the pursuit of comfort, that if I reach these type of lengths and levels, it must be of God. And that's why it's right. So if we now get to the point where, again, if we could just separate from white people, separate from Africans,
and we get our own schools, we get our own land, and we get our own houses. We can establish our own courts. We can establish our own police force. We can establish our own banks. We can establish our own markets. That we can establish our own. That's going to make everything go right. Because the fact that we know we're human Israelites, we know we're going to act right. But it's just we've done this. And no, we didn't act right. That's why we're here. So, and moving on, and trying now to get to the annotated Bible, a Levite in his concubine. Okay, that's chapter 19, before we get there. Brothers and sisters, let's go to Judges chapter 18. And verse 1. Basically, brothers and sisters, Judges chapter 17, 18, 19 through 21, they kind of all go together. They all kind of go together in the fact of testifying to the mindsets and the mentality of the Israelites, of us not having a government that was established by the Most High with the teachers of the Most High's word to really show us and give us the Most High's judgments, not based on how men feel, not based on a respected persons because they have to have certain luxuries or pleasures or privileges, so they must be of God. That was not how the Most High did things. Now, coming to Judges chapter 18 and verse 1, this is jumping directly off of chapter 17 from this Levite who was basically a gypsy, a hippie, a vagabond that was just a Levite. Had no other credentials. He was just a Levite. And wandered up into this town of Ephraim and found this guy Micah who was already into idolatry, already into graven images, already into doing what was right in his own eyes, that while this Levite went to Micah's estate, while he went to Micah's palace, that Micah already had one of his sons raised up to be his own priest. Micah already had all his graven images and idols in his and of the other gods in his house, in his palace. And now he brought this Levite who would do the sacrifices of the Hebrew Israelites as far as the lambs and the rams and the goats. Just a big ball of everything. No order, but because it seemed right in his eyes. And he taught this madness to his family. And they carried it on. So now we come to Judges chapter 18 and verse 1. The book of Judges chapter 18 and verse 1. It says, in those days, there was no king in Israel. And in those days, the tribe of the Danites sought them an inheritance to dwell in. For unto that day, all the inheritance had not fallen unto them among the tribes of Israel. Brothers and sisters, when I read this, it put me on floor. When I talk about how greedy and how selfish we got Israelites, how far away we got from the royal commandment, love it, love the Most High with all your heart and all your soul, and to love your neighbors, you love yourself. And remember, the Gad, Reuben, and half tribe of Manasseh, if I remember correctly, and coming out of the wilderness and coming to the promised land, they took the land that was on this side of Jordan, which before was the land of the Amorites. But it was told to them that they couldn't settle, that they could leave their family, the men of war. They wanted that land, and it was agreed upon. Y'all can have this land. Your family can have this land, but y'all have to still help your brothers until they get their land, until they get their settlement. Y'all ain't gonna just take this. Y'all see this good land, how good it is, gonna jump on it, and then y'all gonna just be into yourselves, and you're not gonna help the rest of Israel, your brothers and the families of Israel, get their inheritance. So they agreed to it. We get to the point now where, because we are in previous classes in this series that I've covered, we got to the point where instead of kicking the Canaanites out and destroying all that they had, like God told us to, that in wisdom,
we can put them under tribute, and we can make even more money. So a lot of the Canaanites that we were supposed to destroy, and destroy them, their altars, their women, children, destroy everything. As Israelites, we get to the wisdom, if it don't make dollars, then it don't make sense. Instead of doing what God wants, we can make even more money. And it tells you that that's when we became very effeminate, that we were given to pleasures and luxuries and comforts. We've been through this. Now we're to the point we jump from that point to now. After Joshua's dead, Israel's been going into this thing of nobody can tell me what to do. Everybody's going to do what's right in their own eyes, to where not even the tribe of Dan didn't even get their land yet, because everybody was so focused on making sure what they had for their families was good and not better. That it wasn't about, let me look up for, let me esteem others better than myself. No, it was 100%. Let me esteem me better than I esteem anybody else. We're going to do what's right in our own eyes. That the tribe of Dan didn't even have a land settled. Reading on, brothers, sisters, check it out. Judges chapter 18, verse 2. And the children of Dan sent of their family five men from their coast, men of valor from Zorah and from Eshtaol, to spy out the land and to search it. And they said unto them, go, search the land. Who, when they came to Mount Ephraim, to the house of Micah, they lodged there. Cool. So they're looking for spying out the land, like how Moses sent out the original 12 spies. Go search the land. Now, Dan's having to do this by themselves. So they sent out five strong men. And now they happen to come to this town of Ephraim, the Mount of Ephraim. And they happen to come to the house, the estate, the plantation, the palace of Micah. Instead of palace, I'll say castle. The castle of Micah and all that he had, okay? And they lodged there. Verse 3. When they were by the house of Micah, they knew the voice of the young man, the Levite. And they turned in thither and said unto him, who brought thee hither? So they recognized this Levite's voice. Like, hey, hold on, we know you. Now, how'd you get here? And what makest thou in this place? And what hast thou here? And why are you here? What you doing? Verse 4. And he said unto them, thus and thus dealeth Micah with me, and hath hired me, and I am his priest. And they said unto him, ask counsel, we pray thee, of the Most High, that we may know whether our way in which we go shall be prosperous. All right, cool. So you're a priest? All right, bet. Well, ask the Most High if we're good, because brother says, remember, Micah went and made his own ephod. We didn't go over that today. Micah went and made his own ephod and his own terium, basically his own Ark of the Covenant, as well as having his other graven images and his other idols, as well as having raising one of his sons as a priest. And then, and then the silver that his mom gave, which was of the Most High. She confessed it was of the Most High, but it was to be used to make graven images, that she wanted to be used to make more graven images, to make more idols. It says, so now, okay, you're a priest, there's an ephod, there's a temple, there's an Ark of the Covenant. Man, the Most High must be here. Ask. Verse 6, and the priest said unto them, go in peace. Before the Lord is your way wherein you go. Then the five men departed and came to Laish and saw the people that were therein, how they dwelt careless after the manner of the Zidonians, quiet and secure. And there was no magistrate in the land that might put them to shame in anything. And they were far from the Zidonians and had no business with any man. Separate. Now, this is how the men of Laish were living, right? The Most High, when things were in the fourth time, went far learning, right? Message, verse 8. And they came unto their brethren, to Zorah and Eshtaol, and their brethren said unto them, what say ye? So they came back to the Danites as the spied of the land. They came back to the Danites. Said, man, so what shall I have to say? What's up? All right, verse 9. And they said, arise, that we may go up and against them, for we have seen the land. And behold, it is very good. And are ye still? Be not slothful to go and to enter to possess the land. When you go, ye shall come unto a people secure and to a large land, for God has given unto your hands a place where there is no want of anything that is in the earth. This is how prosperous this is. You ain't got to ask nobody for nothing. It's everything you ever want for your families, for whatever. It's all good. Verse 11. And there went from thence of the family of the Danites, out of Zorah and out of Eshtaol, 600 men appointed with weapons of war. And they went up and pitched in Kirjath-Jearim in Judah. Wherefore they called the place Manahana Dan unto this day. Behold, it is beyond Kirjath-Jearim. And they passed thence unto Mount Ephraim and came into the house of Micah. Then answered the five men that went up to spy out the country of Laish and said unto their brethren, do you know that there is in these houses an ephod and teraphim and a graven image and a molten image? Now, therefore, consider what you have to do. Verse 15, listen to this conniving. Well, listen. Verse 15, and they turned thitherward and came to the house of the young man, the Levite, even unto the house of Micah, and saluted him. And the 600 men appointed with their weapons of war, which were of the children of Dan, stood by the entering of the gate. And the five men that went to spy out the land went up and came in thither and took the graven image and the ephod and the teraphim, which was like the Ark of the Covenant, and the molten image. And the priest stood in the entering of the gate with the 600 men that were appointed with weapons of war. Verse 18, and these went with Micah's house and fetched the carved image, the ephod, and the teraphim, and the molten image. This said to the priest. Then said the priest unto them, what do ye? Verse 19, and they said unto him, hold your peace. Lay thy hand upon thy mouth and go with us and be to us a father and a priest. It is better for thee to be a priest unto the house of one man, or that thou be a priest unto a tribe and a family in Israel. And the priest's heart was glad. And he took the ephod and the teraphim and the graven image, and he went into the midst of the people. So they turned and departed and put the little ones and the cattle and the carriage before them. And when they were a good way from the house of Micah, the men that were in the house near to Micah's house were gathered together and overtook the children of Dan. And they cried unto the children of Dan. And they turned their faces and said unto Micah, what aileth thee that thou comest with such a company? They just stole this man's priest, graven images, molten images, teraphim, ephod. And as the men of the city of came after them, they were like, man, why y'all tripping? Remember, it was always said that everybody's doing what's right in their own mind, in their own eyes. So they didn't see a problem with it. They didn't see a problem with not only, okay, you got this priest with the so-called ephod, with the so-called, the only Joseph was supposed to have, not Joseph, but the tribe of Ephraim, the tribe of Levi, the sons of Aaron were supposed to only be in possession of. But y'all get the teraphim too, just like the Ark of the Covenant? And you got all these other graven images, these other idols, these other gods? And then it's not like you have a lack of priest. You got your own son who's a priest, and now you also got this Levi as a priest. So we're taking them, what's the problem? It's not like you're hurting for money. Reading on. Judges chapter 18, verse 24. And he said, "Ye have taken away my gods I made and the priest, and ye are gone away. And what have I more? And what is this that ye say unto me, what aileth thee?" This would make a great movie, a great comedy. Unfortunately, this is real life. Judges 18, verse 25. "And the children of Dan said unto him, let not thy voice be heard among us, lest angry fellows run upon thee, and thou lose thy life with the lives of thy household. You better watch your mouth." This is what they're saying. You better watch your mouth. You better put some respect on it. Yeah, we just deboed you. And you better not say nothing. Almost like if it was a prison, like, nigga, you better sit down to pee. I don't want to hear you pee. You're not a man. Reading on, I wish I could say that this was how Esau has been treating Israel for the longest time. But no, this was Israelites with Israelites. Judges chapter 18, verse 26. "And the children of Dan went their way. And when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back to his house." What was he going to do? "And they took the things which Micah had made, and the priest which he had, and came unto Laish, unto a people that were at quiet and secure. And they smote them with the edge of the sword, and burnt the city with fire." Verse 28. "And there was no deliverer, because it was far from Zidon. And they had no business with any man. And it was in the valley that lieth by Beth Rahab. And they built a city and dwelt therein. And they called the name of the city Dan, as the name of Dan, their father, who was born unto Israel. Howbeit, the name of the city was Laish at the first." So, again, it wasn't like these cats here needed to do an Ancestry.com search on who they were. They didn't have to do a DNA search to prove that they knew they were Israelites. And that now that they found this city, and now they're in this city, and they've got their own land, and with all good land, great crops, and God gave them the victory. Obviously, it had to be God. They got the victory. And God must be with them, because we just kidnapped this priest. We just stole these man-made gods, as well as the ephod and the teraphim. God must be with us. If God didn't want me to have it, then why do I have it? Again, there was no king in Israel, and everybody did what was right in their own eyes. Reading on, verse 30. Judges 18, verse 30. "And the children of Dan set up the graven image, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, he and his sons were priests to the tribe of Dan until the day of the captivity of the land." So we were so far away from God's order, God's laws, God's word, God's ministry, that it wasn't, again, Levites of Aaron that were set up as priests. It was some cats, Jonathan, the son of Gershom,
the son of Manasseh. They were set up as priests to the tribe of Dan until the day of the captivity of the land. And then we wonder, you know, where, how does Israel, how do we give ourselves over to like voodoo and Sateria and Bluharia and roots? If you're a Jew from the south, put the root on you. Nigga, we've been doing this type of madness. Israelites. Reading on. Verse 31. Israelites living in their own land, not in their own municipalities, set up their own government, having their own crops, having their own everything, to the point where no one's going to tell us what to do. We're going to do what's right in our own eyes. Verse 31. And they set them up Micah's graven image, which he made all the time that the house of God was in Shiloh. Going to Judges chapter 19, verse 1. The book of Judges chapter 19, verse 1. And it came to pass in those days when there was no king in Israel that there was a certain Levite sojourning in the side of Mount Ephraim who took to him a concubine out of Bethlehem, Judah. And we're all kind of, we're familiar with this. We're familiar with, it, with this passage. And his concubine played the whore against him and went away from him unto her father's house to Bethlehem, Judah, and was there 4 whole months. And her husband arose and went after her to speak friendly unto her and to bring her again, having his servant with him and a couple of asses. And she brought him into her father's house. And when the father of the damsel saw him, he rejoiced to meet him. And his father-in-law, the damsel's father, retained him, and he abode with him 3 days. So they did eat and drink and lodge there. And it came to pass on the 4th day, when they arose early in the morning, that he rose up to depart. And the damsel's father said unto his son-in-law, comfort thine heart with a morsel of bread, and afterward go your way. And they sat down and did eat and drink, both of them together. For the damsel's father had said unto the man, be content, I pray thee, and tarry all night, and let thine heart be merry. And when the man rose up to depart, his father-in-law urged him. Therefore he lodged there again. Verse 8. And he arose early in the morning on the 5th day of to depart. And the damsel's father said, comfort thine heart, I pray thee. And they tarried until afternoon. And they did eat, both of them. And when the man arose up to depart, he and his concubine and his servant, his father-in-law, the damsel's father, said unto him, behold, now the day draws toward the evening. I pray you, tarry all night. Behold, the day groweth to an end. Lodge here, that thy heart may be merry. And tomorrow get you early on your way, that thou mayest go home. Verse 10, but the man would not tarry that night. But he rose up and departed, and came over against Jebus, which is Jerusalem. And there were with him 2 asses, saddled. His concubine also was with him. And when they were by Jebus, the day was far spent. And the servant said unto his master, come, I pray thee, and let us turn in unto this city of the Jebusites, and lodge in it. And his master said unto him, we will not turn aside hither unto the city of a stranger that is not of the children of Israel. We will pass over to Gibeah. And he said unto his servant, come, and let us draw near to one of these places to lodge all night in Gibeah or in Ramah. And they passed on and went their way. And the sun went down upon them when they were by Gibeah, which belonged to Benjamin. And they turned aside thither to go in and to lodge in Gibeah. And when he went in, he set him down in a street of the city, for there was no man that took them into his house for lodging. So forget the laws of the Most High, that we're supposed to take care of strangers, especially if they were other Israelites.
even though we might not have known and know they were Israel, we're supposed to bring them to our house to make sure they're fed, taken care of. This was not done. Israel was on some much selfish bullshit. This is a strange thing. I'm going to bring it to my house. I don't know why y'all here doing that. What are you doing? Forget that. Contrary to the law, contrary to love your neighbors, you love yourself. Contrary to thou shalt not treat strangers, you can remember that you were strangers together in Egypt. Forget all that. Nah, this nigga might be trying to come and spy out what I got. He might be wanting to steal. He might have some bad intentions. Verse 16. So there was no hospitality given. Verse 16. Judges chapter 19, verse 16. And behold, there came an old man from his work out of the field at even, which was also of Mount Ephraim, and he sojourned in Gibeah. But the men of the place were Benjamites. So here comes this old man that's from Ephraim, but he's living over here in Gibeah, the city of Benjamin. But this man from Ephraim is now living over here, old man. Verse 17, and when he had lifted up his eyes, he saw a wayfaring man in the street of the city. And the old man said, whither goest thou, and whence comest thou? And he said unto him, we are passing from Bethlehem, Judah, toward the side of Mount Ephraim. From thence am I. And I went to Bethlehem, Judah, but I am now going to the house of the Lord, and there is no man that receiveth me to house. Yeah, I'm just trying to get home, man. Ain't nobody gives a damn. You know how, if you ever run out of gas, and got nobody to call, and people just walk by, just drive by, like, and out damn and honk at you because you inconvenienced them by holding up traffic. And the only thought or thought process is you're interfering or making it not convenient for what I'm what I got going on. And how good does it feel when somebody stops or comes by and says, man, you need a hand? Need some help? I got you. But imagine that feeling. That's the scenario right here. But this is supposed to be among Israelites, living in the city of Israelites. That this Levite here was like, no, we're not gonna go to a city of strangers of the actual other nations. No, we're gonna go to a city of Israel, a people where we know we have our own crops, our own houses, our own banks, our own markets, our own hotels, our own establishments. I know we'll be straight among our people. But then to get here and this is the reaction? Reading on. Judges 7, 19, verse 19. Yet there is both straw and provender. For our asses. And there is bread and wine also for me and for my handmaid. And for the young man, which is with thy servants, there is no want of anything. Like, people treat me like I'm just coming to mooch off of them. Look, I got straw and provender for the asses, so I'm not gonna eat nobody else's food. I got bread and wine for me and for my servants and for my handmaid. We're good. I don't want anything from anybody. I'm not a bum. He's having to say this among Israelites in our own city, a city of Israelites. But this was a time where there was no king. And it grew to the point where everybody was only doing what was right in their own eyes. And somehow this seemed right to us as Israelites. Verse 20. And the old man said, now imagine also, this mentality of not extending to anybody, This was the mentality of the whole city. Everybody in this particular city was acting the same way. Did you catch that? That this mental cancer had spread to everybody in the whole city. And luckily, this man of Ephraim that was that had traveled and started living here, he wasn't quite as infected with that sickness that was now infected all the rest of the Benjamites or the Israelites that were at this city. Verse 20, and the old man said, peace be unto thee, shalom. Howsoever, let all thy wants be upon me. Only lodge not in the street. Oh, man, you can't stay in the street. And look, I got you. And don't worry about, look, save your food, say whatever. Just come with me. But y'all cannot stay in the street. You can't stay out here. Not among, he didn't say it, but you can kind of get the feeling like, not among these niggas. Y'all got to come on. We got to go. Verse 21. So they brought him into his house and gave provender unto the asses, and they washed their feet and did eat and drink. Now we're going to enter into Gibeah's crimes. Now, as they were making their hearts merry, behold, the men of the city, certain sons of Belial, beset the house round about and beat at the door and spake unto the master of the house and the old man, saying, bring forth the man that came unto thine house, that we may know him. And the man, the master of the house, went out unto them. Nay, my brethren, nay, I pray you, do not so wickedly, seeing that this man is come into mine house. Do not defile it. Behold, here is my daughter, a maiden, and a concubine. Them I will bring out now, and humble ye them, and do with them what seemeth good unto you. But unto this man, do no such vile a thing. But the men would not hearken unto him. So the man took his concubine and brought her forth unto them. And they knew her and abused her all that night until the morning. And when the day began to spring, they let her go. And then came the woman in the dawning of the day, and fell down at the door of the man's house where her lord was, and it was light. And her lord rose up in the morning and opened the door of the house and went out to go his way. And behold, the woman, his concubine, was fallen down at the door of the house, and her hands were upon the threshold. And he said unto her, up, and let us be going. But none answered. Then the man took her up upon an ass, and the man rose up and got him unto his place. And when he was come unto his place, his house, he took him a knife and laid hold on his concubine and divided her together with her bones into 12 pieces and sent her into all the coasts of Israel. And it was so that all that saw it said, there was no such deed done nor seen from the day that the children of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt unto this day. Consider of it, take advice, and speak your mind. So this is how far away we got from the Most High. That the dudes in this city thought that it was right in their eyes to have this man's concubine. This is the danger of when a person judges their righteousness by their prosperity, by the level of comfort and pleasures that they and their family are able to enjoy. And that's the measure, the barometer of righteousness, is their prosperity. Look at how far things have gotten. That in the pursuit of just of pleasures, in the pursuit of just doing what felt right to them, they wound up raping this woman all night long until it killed her. And obviously this was something that this rape scene, I can only imagine, it must have been something common. that no, it wasn't on anybody's conscience that they took this man's concubine. And did R. Kelly, 12 play, sester all night long, doing Lord knows what via R. Kelly, Michael Jackson, Pornhub, that it was no thing. This you know, the old Snoop Dogg, N.W.A., it ain't no fun if the homies can't have none. This mentality was a mentality of Israelites living in the land of Israel, where everybody was just doing what was right in their own mind. And I'm not going to let anybody tell, and my level of righteousness, my barometer, everybody's barometer for righteousness was how it made them feel, how their actions made them feel. And here you had whole cities that was gathered together, and these whole cities, these whole towns, agreed in that same mentality. That this is what we do, and this is how this city is. Forget Las Vegas, Sin City. Each one of the cities of Israel was this bad for whatever things they were given to, that it was about, we're going to do what feels right by us. That's why, you know, we can understand from the scripture where it says, a man will cleave to his like. We got people that think like this. Now, just think about this for a second, brothers and sisters. You have Israelites that have this mentality, and you want to move with them to some acreage? You want to move with men like this? So all they need to do is be able to call themselves Israelites. And that's enough that we need to go ahead and go get some acres, build some houses, build some schools, build some businesses, build some crops, and we all going to be here. But we have men with this type of mentality, with some real thwarted, sick mentalities, and the only thing that's needed is that because they call themselves Israelites and they eat organic, there is nothing new under the sun. Coming back now, let me catch up with my notes. All right, so we just read Judges chapter 19, right? 18 and Judges chapter 19. Get some commentary. Where am I at? Okay, 17 and 6. Now, get some commentary. When we go to the annotated Bible commentary, I'm going to get this in the East Ward. Commentary. Okay. The annotated Bible commentary, a Levi and his concubine. And we're going to just go over Judges chapter 19, and we'll do the commentary for Judges chapter 19, verses 1 and 2. Then we'll get them down to 10 through 15, and then 20 through 25. And this from the annotated Bible commentary, Judges chapter 19, also verses 1 through 30. And it states, Israel's moral condition and the war on Benjamin. Chapter 19, the Levi and his concubine. The results of departure from God are now revealed in the awful corruption and violence so faithfully recorded in this chapter. Now, we're just coming from chapter 17 where it was first recorded that there was no king in Israel, so everybody did what was right in their own eyes. And we read about Micah stealing silver from his mom, restoring it back to her. The silver should be used to make graven images anyway. So he made his own ephod, his own teraphim, his own which is his own Ark of the Covenant, as well as all the other graven images that he had to build up his house, to show how powerful, how spiritual his house was. He raised up his son to be his own priest, and then took this Levite and made him a priest, that we've already had that going on. Then we come into chapter 18, and the Danites, who none of Israel tried to help them get their land secure, these cats come and they steal this gypsy vagabond Levite and all of Micah's gods, as well as his own man-made ephod and his own man-made teraphim. When confronted by Micah and the men of Ephraim of that city, the Danites was like, man, don't get too loud. Don't get too angry, lest you cause us to get angry, and now there's going to be some bloodshed. Then these Danites went and took some sons of the house of Manasseh to be their priests, and all they're being based on now the level of prosperity that they were enjoying now. That the Most High must be, that what they're doing must be right. Taking all that consideration, now to get to Judges chapter 19. The Levite and his concubine, again, the results of departure from the Most High are now revealed in this awful corruption and violence so faithfully recorded in this chapter. The moral condition of Israel has gone down to the same level of the Canaanites. They sink down to this, they sink even lower than the nations which God had doomed to destruction. We do not repeat the horrible details of this deed of lust and violence. Apostasy from the Most High, rejection of the truth, is followed by moral corruption. And when we read Romans chapter 12, verses 6 through 32, it goes into, these are some of the same habits exhibited in Rome that Paul was talking about among Israelites. It just shows the vileness of the Gentiles who turned their backs to the light and did not glorify the Most High. Again, 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 5, contains the description of the moral corruption of the last days of this present age. The condition of those who claim to be religious and yet are apostates. Not apostles, apostates. Apostate is somebody who is a rejecter of God. It says, the days of Lot with their vileness are to precede the coming of the Son of Man. Luke chapter 17, verse Luke, the 17th chapter, verses 20 through 30. Evidences that such moral corruption and violence exist today throughout professing Christendom are only too numerous. Among those claiming to be Israelites or Christians or followers of Christ, when the annotated Bible commentary was put together, and I believe this also was in the 1700s, that says even at that time, the immorality among those claiming to be followers of Christ was too numerous. Moving up to the when we come to the parallel Bibles, right? When we come to the parallel Bibles, let me read Judges chapter 19, verse 1 through 4 once again. From the King James Apocrypha, when we read Judges chapter 19, verse 1 through 4, let me just, as a recap, and I know our time is about to come to an end. So the Levite and his concubine, and it came to pass in those days, but there was no king in Israel, but there was a certain Levite sojourning on the side of Mount Ephraim, who took him a concubine out of Bethlehem, Judah, and was... And his concubine played the whore against him and went away from him unto her father's house to Bethlehem, Judah, and was there 4 whole months. And her husband rose and went after her to speak friendly to her and to bring her again, having his servant with him and a couple of asses. And she brought him unto her father's house. And When the father of the damsel saw him, he rejoiced to meet him. And his father-in-law, the damsel's father, restrained him, and he abode with them 3 days, so they didn't eat and drink and lodge there. So when it talks about this woman being a whore, let's kind of go into that a little bit. When we go to the, let me pull this up. The ABP plus, which is the apostate Bible polyglot with Strong's numbers. The apostolic Bible polyglot with Strong's numbers. This is what it reads. This is what it's translated as. And it says, and there was a man, a Levite, sojourning on the sides of Mount Ephraim, and he took to himself a woman, a concubine from Bethlehem, Judah. Okay, so it said he took him a concubine from Bethlehem, Judah. In the Bible, in basic English, it reads, now in those days, when there was no king in Israel, a certain Levite was living in the most parts of the hill country of Ephraim, and he got for himself a servant wife from Bethlehem, Judah. And in the Merriam Study Bible, it says, now in those days when there was no king in Israel, a Levite who lived in the remote hill country of Ephraim took for himself a concubine from Bethlehem, Judah. I do want to kind of get this real quick, if I might. I know my time is expired. The 2 hours is done. When we go to the John Gill's Bible commentary, I'm going to go ahead and finish this up. In the John Gill's Bible commentary, a lot of people have said, even a conversation I was in with my wife, it was like, well, damn, why didn't they protect her? Why didn't anybody protect her? Well, what was going on? What was happening? And again, reflecting on the fact that everybody was already doing what was right in their own eyes anyway, and wouldn't let nobody tell them. But everybody, your own governor is your own feelings. Then when you live by that model, that mantra, then you think everybody can live that way. And this is what was going on in Israel at this time. So just because you might have your morals in one place because of how it makes you feel, doesn't mean that now everybody else is going to just follow you. Because that's how you feel. You make sure you live your life for how you feel. So that gives everybody else around you permission to live their life according to how they feel. And if your righteousness is based on how you feel, then everybody else's righteousness can be based on how they feel. When we come to Judges chapter 19, verse 2, from the John Gill Bible commentary, this is what it reads. And his concubine prayed the whore against him. And this is what the understanding from the research, from the being able to access the research books he was able to access. And this is what John Gill was able to put together. He says that really, and was unfaithful to him and his bed, and broke the covenant and agreement between them. For with him, while she was with him in the house or before him, of which he had knowledge and proof, do some think this is not to be understood of whoredom or adultery, but of her ill usage of him. So it wasn't even the fact that she was the whoredom, was that she was just out sleeping around. It's the way she was using him. This is what a lot of scholars were putting together, and John Gill was able to compile. That it wasn't so much that she was physically sleeping with other men. It's the fact that she was using this man, that she was taking advantage of his love. Similar to Samson, Delilah wasn't sleeping with other Canaanites, Phoenicians, but they were able to influence her. They were able to get inside her head to go against her husband. that this is the same case here. This is why she was called a whore, that she was committing whoredom. Not the fact that she was physically sleeping with others before they got to Gibeah, while they were in Bethlehem, Judah, that her open disrespect of him, and we're going to read as we read on, the open arguing that she gave herself over to, knowing that he was going to have to adjust. That's what it was all about. So reading on, it says, but of her ill usage of him and departure from him. And so she decided she's going to leave. That it was that she was used to him. He confronted her about what she was doing. She get mad. And what was her answer? I'm going to my daddy's house. I'm going to my daddy. If you ain't going to submit, this is what she was saying to this priest. If you ain't going to submit to me, I'm going to my daddy's house. If you ain't going to do it my way, and for all the arguing they kept getting into, she let him know, I got somewhere to go. That I'm not going to do it your way. So bring it on. It says the Targum is five term. So Kenichi, who is a historian, so Kenichi and Ben Gershom interpret it of her declining and turning aside from him and returning to her father's house. And so other historians said, yeah, it was all about, I'm not going to submit to my husband, and I can go home to my dad's house, where with my dad, I can get what I want. I can do what I want. Reading on. And indeed, had she been guilty of such a crime, one would think he would never have sought after her to reconcile her and take her again, since she not only deserved to be put away, but to be put to death according to the law of the Most High. So this mentality of everybody's doing what was right in their own eyes, everybody was doing what was right in their own eyes. I'm not going to keep God's order on any level among men and women. And according to 2 Timothy, that it was also going to be a thing of, when I say 2 Timothy, said in the last days, that children would not obey their parents, that these type of behaviors must have already been taking place. Reading on, it says, and go back now to the scripture when it says, and went away from him to her father's house to Bethlehem, Judah. And mind you, she's a Judite. Mind you, she's a Judite married to this Levite. It says, where she was, now this is the commentary, it says, where she was received, as she knew she should, having a parent perhaps too indulgent, and which was an encouragement to her to leave her husband. So this is what if we can examine this or understand this on as many different levels as this is being shown, about look at what happens when everybody is using how they feel, their level of prosperity, their level of comfort, that's what makes what they're doing righteous. But like it says in Romans chapter 10, that Israel being ignorant of God's righteousness, and if we go about and establish our own righteousness, that we've not submitted ourselves to the righteousness of the Most High. This one thing, when Paul wrote it down in Romans, that wasn't just that something that just popped up at that time, or something that's just going to just pop up because now we're here in America. This is recorded history. Things written aforetime are written for our learning. Reading on. In Judges chapter 19, verses 10 to 12, you know what? I'm going to have to end it with that. I'm going to end it with that. When I pick up again, we're going to continue with the rest of Judges chapter 19, even though we read the whole chapter. We're also going to go into Judges chapter 20 and chapter 21 and seeing how, just again, imagine, everybody doing what was right in their own eyes, that the men of the city of Gibeah raped this woman until they killed her. And there was no sense of consequence. There was no sense of this was wrong, just like it wasn't wrong for her to argue with her husband and a bunch of her dad's house. That wasn't wrong. It wasn't wrong for these men to do what they thought was right, was okay, was because it was based on their feelings also. They raped the woman till they killed her. If everybody's righteousness is based on their level of comfort, pleasure, and prosperity, and according to how they feel, I can't find the words right now to express. How do you understand how dangerous this is? To be lovers of pleasures, one of the lovers of the Most High, it's about what pleases you, and that is the only sense or boundary that you're setting is according to how you feel. And then I'm not going to go around somebody who's going to give me God's word unless I'm doing like these Danites did. I'm still a priest who's going to tell me what I want to hear. So with that, brothers and sisters, thank you for tuning in, whether it was tonight, through the Blog Talk Radio app, where you might have called in at 646-668-2568, or if you want to be catching this on the instant replay or the archive libraries located at Google Podcasts, located at iHeartRadio Podcast, located on Apple iTunes Podcast, or located on Podcast Addict, right? Podcast Addict. Yeah, if you just you pull these services up and you type in ISBHPK Bible Talk, ISBHPK Bible Talk, you'll be able to log in and you can subscribe. We ask everybody to go ahead and subscribe to these channels. And as we do each of our shows, whether it's Talks About Tuesdays, or he does in the mornings, or sometimes I might have my class in the morning, I might have my class in the evening, or blah, 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 I might do this on Friday nights or Sunday afternoons, that you can still keep abreast of our latest shows and broadcasts that we do, as well as there's a library there. Now, the library that's on Apple iTunes, iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict, and Google Podcasts, they only keep 300 episodes. Right? They only keep they only go back 300 episodes. If you go to the blogtalkradio.com webpage, and go to type in Mashaba, M-A-S-H-A-H-B-A. And you go to our original podcasting on here in our webpage there, that we have over 1,000 shows there. 1,000, I believe we're at like 1,050 right now. 1,050 shows that you can go back and archive for the past 11 years, 12 years, going all the way back to the very beginning, from when we very first started our very first podcast. Way back in 2010. So with that, brothers and sisters, I'm going to say, ask you please continue to check out Tuesdays as the brother tells the pod his wife, Hassan, I'd like to remind everybody to tell a friend, to please tell a friend to tune in to Talks About Tuesdays, coming to you every Tuesday morning from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Central Standard Time here, Texas San Antonio Time, and make your adjustments for the different time zones that you might be living in. And with that, I'm sitting right in my mouth and got my music queued up yet. With that, my name is Mashaba. I would like to say shalom.
Shema. Yahweh.